Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. For those of you who caught my live stream stand-up recently, you know we partnered with Live by Live to make that show available, free of charge. And Live by Live has so much more to offer. Remember what MTV used to be? When M stood for music? That's what Live by Live is, but it's much better. The all-in-one music app provides live streaming concerts, thousands of streaming radio stations, expertly curated, and in every genre of music, podcasts, like the Adam Carolla Show, and tons of original music and entertainment content. Our friends at Live by Live offer to give fans of my podcast 2 months free of Live by Live Plus, which gets you no ads and unlimited audio skips. Just go to livexlive.com and search for Adam Carolla, or get the Live X Live app. That's livexlive.com, or download the Live X Live app to start listening to music and watching the very best concerts. Hey everyone, it's Adam Carolla. Welcome to another episode of Going Racing, a show that highlights the fastest cars, best races, and biggest celebrities in the automotive world. All right, back from our biggest weekend of the year.
Yeah, right? We love it. Oh, I got wine and cheese coming out of my pores. The wine I expected, the cheese.
Yeah, we
now it's just like water every day just to try to flush everything out.
I know. To be fair,
this was easier when we were 6 years younger than... At least for me.
Yeah, I got home and I think I put on about 7 pounds.
Wow.
In like 4 days.
You did better than I did.
I think I did three. Yeah, but adjusted for inflation. I think it's about right. I immediately went on a diet when I got back because, you know, the problem is you're not going to go out. You're going to drink beers. You're going to have champagne. You're going to do all the stuff Vinny says not to do. And you
graze all day.
That's
what you do. You just graze all day,
right?
On cheese and wine and champagne and chocolate.
Right. It's all there. And look, everybody, in terms of life philosophies, you're not there to torture yourself or abstain. What you're there to is indulge. So
yeah.
Take it easy the week going into it,
yeah,
and then take it easy when you get back.
Yeah,
and all will be right with the universe.
You were on the treadmill like 12 hours before going in, or 10 hours before going into it. You're like, we're getting ready.
I wanted to cut weight like a wrestler.
So I ran the morning that we drove out. Wednesday morning, I was out early just getting ready.
So we had a great trip, thanks to Lincoln, who gave us a Navigator Black Label. And
that thing's kind of badass.
It's nice, and the interior's awesome. And for what we had going in terms of our crew, six-man, traveled out with four, but there were times when we were traveling around with six.
Yeah.
And the space, and Sonny having a great time and everything. That was just the weapon of choice.
That worked out perfectly.
It was very convenient for what we were doing.
Very convenient.
The entire trip we were saying.
The third row seat. And by the way, super convenient because it had storage cubbies and power outlets everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So we went out and we got the Newman car ready, and it was the 85 GT1 car that we've talked about in the past. And we didn't really shake the car out per se, but we did put it on the dyno.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things...
Casey Millett helped a little bit.
He's an ex-racer and an all-around good guy. One of the things, and one of the reasons you do shake it out, is the car was sitting up really high in the front. And I said to Sean, get out your special spring perch tools and let's lower this front of this car. And he said, I think it's going to rub. It's going to scrape the body. And I said, let's just lower it and let's go try it. And he said, drive it at the track, see if it rubs. If it doesn't rub, we'll lower it. And then I said, yeah, but it's sitting up really high now. Could we lower it a little bit? And he said, Casey says, and I think, go to the track and drive it. So we went to the track and we drove it on Thursday.
Yeah.
And nothing rubbed. And by the way, just because we're nut jobs, he brought like a cutting wheel and a reciprocating saw, and like we're ready to carve out some fiberglass at the track if something was rubbing.
In case it was rubbing, yeah. Good plan.
And I went out and ran it on Thursday morning, and I came back in, and I said, nothing rubbed. Now I want you to drop the front end. And he said, how much? And I said, 3/4. And he said, how about 5/8? And I said, no, I want 3/4. And don't give me the passive aggressive thing that everyone does with me, which is I tell them 3/4 and they go, no, actually, I said, how about 3/4? And he said, how about 1/2 inch? And I said, no, 3/4. And he said, we'll meet you at 5/8. And I said, 3/4. And I don't want to come back and find out that you just lowered it 5/8 and had some shit where it's like, well, the bump stopped, you know, when, people do that where they just tell you whatever.
They were going to do their thing
anyway.
They're
going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Sean dropped the front end 3/4. And then I went out Friday morning and nothing rubbed. And then I came back and I said, drop the front end again. And he said, how much? And I said, 3/4. And he said, Okay. And he dropped it 3/4. And I went out on Friday and ran it, and nothing rubbed. And then I came back again. And I said, drop it again. And he said, I think we're out. Like, we're maxed out.
We're out of.
We brought out another 3/8 or something. And I said, well, then just drop it down and max it out.
Yeah.
And so we did.
And it didn't rub.
Nothing ever rubbed. Now, it's painful knowing everything all the time.
I don't know how you do it.
Because you end up, you're standing there with Sean, who's better than you are, and Casey Millett, who knows more about this than anybody, and they're telling you this is not going to work, and all I got is, comedian podcaster musses around with the cars here and again, but all I got is, I don't like this front end. I want it lower.
Yeah.
That's about all I got. I don't have a lot. If Sean and Casey Millett are saying it's going to rub, I don't have a lot to fire back with. Other than, I don't think it will.
Like, Casey came in and had a lot of input on gear ratios and spring rates and ride height and everything else. So we kind of went with what he was saying.
But what's the moral of the story?
I'd like to think that the moral of the story is we can fix anything at the track now, but I'm going to go with you were right.
I think the moral of the story is let's drop it down 1/2 inch while we're at the shop. Go out there and see if it rubs. On the other hand, if it starts rubbing, you got to come in immediately and you're kind of out of a practice session. So I get their argument. And the way we did it was fine, except for poor Sean had to keep lifting the front of the car up and redoing it.
But he was prepped. He had all of his tools. He had all of his gear. He got all that stuff quickly.
Yeah.
Sean and Rob did a good job.
We had my shift light idea.
Yeah. So you posted it on Twitter. We posted the video on social media and on Twitter or YouTube or something. And then just a ton of questions. What's going on with that light?
Right. All those cars had a shift light. Like you'd see on drag car from the 80s or something. Those just barrels that are, they're 5-6 inches deep. They're an inch and a quarter around. And they just bolt them up on the cage. sort of eye level, and they're real bright, and they let you know when to shift. I hear the car. I can feel the car pulling and then not pulling, and I can see the tack, and I've never really relied on the shift light. Plus, the shift light in that car's evidently not dialed in, which is why you would want to go out and shake out a car, I guess.
Yeah.
I had this idea the night before we left. I thought, I never know quite what gear I'm in with that car, because the gear pattern is the opposite of the normal H pattern that, like, the Porsche has, which is very easy and familiar and everything. And that also, that gear shift just sort of flops around a lot. Like, it's very floppy.
Right. It's just on a linkage on, like Heim joints, like rod ends or something. And picture driving. Anybody who's driving a stick as you're listening to this, you've got first gear. You shift down to second, up to third, down to fourth. That's pretty much how every car is done. This doesn't have that. Where first gear is normally in your street car, that's reverse.
Right.
And then down, where normally you'd have second gear, that's first gear in this car. So you start with the lever down, and then you shift up to second, and then down to third.
Right.
Right? So it's very a weird pattern.
Counterintuitive, and unless you really drive a lot with that pattern, it just doesn't come naturally.
Yeah.
Especially when the last car you drove in the Porsche 935 had the opposite pattern.
Yeah.
Plus, there's always just that feeling of, like, dropping it down into second, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just what I'm used to. I mean, you know, I started driving a stick when I was 16 and got my first automatic when I was, like, 33, you know? That's a lot of years of muscle memory. I mean, yeah. Three quarters of it was done in a Nissan pickup truck, but it's still first gear, drop it down in the second, you know?
Gear. Yeah.
So I know my muscle memory, and I know I'm going to screw up, so I was running on the treadmill the night before we left, and I thought, how do I figure out what gear I'm in? And then I thought, a gear selector.
Yeah, an indicator.
Well, I was picturing, like, digital readout, first gear, second gear, third gear, which one day I will do. But I thought, I don't have time for that. I've looked into it a little bit. It's mostly applications for, you know, do you know what it's mostly the application for, the like digital gear selection thing is?
No.
Motorcycles.
Yeah. Okay.
Because a motorcycle is like one down, five up, or four up, or whatever. And in a car, you got the six shift drop down, you know, you're in second gear. You know, it's like a motorcycle. Sometimes it's hard to tell where you're kicked up into neutral.
Right.
You kick it into neutral, like in between, and then you kick it down, and then you kick it up. Sometimes you skip a gear, or sometimes you just kick it back to neutral. Like, that's where you want that digital indicator,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
But they don't really have an automotive thing.
No, we could make something like that.
Yeah, we could adapt something. Yeah. So
the aftermarket is a beautiful industry when it comes to that kind of stuff.
I was like, well, nothing exists. And let's not get greedy. You don't need to know when you're in fifth gear. You know, I know when I'm in fifth gear. It's only fifth gear down the straightaway, and I've just shifted up and in. And by the way, if you are going 120 miles an hour and you didn't catch fifth gear, you'll know it.
Yeah.
The car will let you know. So I didn't need to know I was in fifth. And as far as first goes, I'm not getting down into first on that track just to get out there.
Right.
I didn't need to know about that either. But I did need to know where I was. And so I decided that I want to know when I'm in third gear. And I said, Sean, let's get a little light. I just called him that night. I was like, Sean, I want to know when I'm in third gear. And he's like, ugh. And I'm like, look.
He's wheels up in 6 hours.
All we need is a little push indicator, like the kind of button that doesn't click in and click off. But
like when you open the door of your car or close the hood on your car, it's got like a little button.
It's like a doorbell. Hold it down, it's on. Remove your finger, it's off. Yeah, you know, that's what we need. We just need that. We'll put it under the shift boot. And when that shifter comes back and hold in third, only in third, it will light up a light. So Sean said, we'll do. And then he proceeded to hook up a light But the light that he mounted was way off to the right of the console. I mean, the console with all the toggle switches and everything it. And the track is basically one big left-hand turn.
Yeah.
You're just kind of looking up and to the left. And he has a little expelled, like, Christmas tree light bulb just sitting there. Just a little white bulb. Not a red bulb, not anything bulb. Just there. And I looked at it, and I said, I don't think that's that effective, because I'm looking to the left and this thing's to the right and it's daylight outside and it's a little white bulb with no shroud around it or anything. And
while
it does light up and it technically serves what we've been asking it to do, if that thing was right in the middle of the dash, no problemo, off and to the right, it's not really going to work.
Right. But we figured out how to do it and made a light work.
I was waiting for a switch at that point. Yeah. That's when I don't like to throw the word hero around, but that's where I'm like, I'm going to O'Reilly Auto Parts. And I went there, and I got a little starter switch, like the buttons they use on a hot rod, you know,
momentary switch.
Yeah, a little momentary switch, metal, heavy duty, whatever. Yeah. They were looking for some funky actuator or something that they didn't have or whatever, and I just came back with that, and I came back with a little red light to put in the dash, and I said, put that in the dash, daisy chain it to that one you got over there, and here's your switch, go. And then I had a beer, climbed into a Lincoln Navigator, and left.
Yeah.
And when I got to the track and I went out on Thursday for practice, it struck me that the little white bulb all the way to the right was lighting up pretty good, but it was really far to the right. Mm-hmm. The little red one I'd put in the dash was like dim and... my hand was blocking it with the steering wheel, or whatever, and I couldn't see it.
Couldn't see it.
What unfortunately was driving me nuts was the shift light, which had not been calibrated or anything, was just like every time I got over like 4,000 RPM was just blinking, like so I would have a seizure. It was just like blah, 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 blah. And I was like, would you please stop it? And now, not only am I sort of distracted that I can't find my third gear shift. My third gear light.
Yeah.
But I have a big red bright light with a shroud around it just strobing in my face.
Right.
On the left side as I'm going around the left-handed track, just blinking in my face, basically saying, look, I don't know what light you're looking for, but over here, over here. And it was just blinking all the time. And I was just getting distracted and exacerbated. Like, oh, great. I got a light and it's going off in my face and it's not my third gear light. And I'm now fully focused on this strobe light up here. So I got back in after practice session on Thursday and I said, hey, Sean, I got an idea. This light up here, we're not really using it to shift. It's not calibrated. It's popping off at like, I don't know, Max Zapata. Mm-hmm. If you find over the shoulder, I think if you find your over the shoulder shot from Thursday morning session, you'll probably just see that light just sort of blinking randomly all sort of through the RPM range. And I got back in to Sean and I said, lower the front end. And
three quarters.
Furthermore, see this light? Yep. It's not really calibrated. So take the wire that goes to the one that's in the dash that I can't see and hook it to this light.
Yeah.
And he said, will do.
Yeah.
And he did. And it worked. Like, now, it occasionally, the gear shift's flopping around all over the place and it's not a hard science and we didn't have much time to rig it up. And I got it. It didn't stay on all the time, but it lets you know, blink, hey, you're in third.
Yeah.
I could concentrate long enough to know that. When it went out, I wasn't like, oh, what gear am I in now? I was like, I'm still in.
Yeah, you're still in third because you didn't shift. You didn't do anything.
Right.
So you turned the shift light into a gear indicator light, just a third gear indicator light, and it looked like it was effective. Like it got you where you wanted to be. Like now you had an idea of, did it help overall? Do you think it helped?
Oh, definitely. It definitely helped because it gave me this that jumping off point of I am in third gear. And it sounds a little feeble-minded to admit this, but it's just I'm so used to the opposite pattern.
Yeah,
it's one less thing to even deal with. It's just that light's red and you're going into fourth, or you're dropping it down into second. That's it. So it was helpful. Race day. Now Max Zapata has to find the race day over the shoulder. You can just keep it on the over the shoulder. I told Big Nate over at the other shop to just send you Saturday afternoon race day. I know. It's funny, Chris, because I told him send it to me, and he never sent it to me. And like I said, sent it to you. But
I got nothing from him.
Hit him.
But I do. I have an over-the-shoulder video. Anything particular?
You can just go you can go Saturday afternoon session, just starting from it. And I had the guy dive bomb me in the Sunoco.
Oh man.
Al. And he was really dive bomb-y. And actually the dive bomb-y from the helmet cam looks pretty good, but actually from over the shoulder you can really see the crazy dive bomb. We
had a good discussion about that as well on CarCast on Wednesday. This past Wednesday, you can hear our live show with Pete Brock and John Morton. So go back and listen to that if you didn't hear that episode. That was fun with those guys. And, there was a discussion about the Sunoco Porsche.
I just, it was a move that was uncalled for that early in the race, for sure.
Right. It's kind of uncalled for in any one of these very expensive vintage races that everybody's out there in their expensive cars on their own dime.
Agreed. So the car, I shut the car down by mistake, and I started 29th instead of what it would have been like 17th or something like that. I'm going to get down into first gear, and you got to jump ahead quite a bit there, Max Vetter. You can jump ahead again. There you go. I'm starting this race in first gear. The reason I'm starting this race in first gear, you just hear me go down in first gear, is because I'm toward the back, and I know we're going to be racing when we go around the corner. I'm not looking for the green flag. It's on. When I turn around the first corner, we're racing. No green flag. Green flag already dropped.
Yeah, I got it.
So that's a first gear start. It's Dave Stone, who's got a 6-10 on passing. My tires
are
cold.
Little drag race down that front straight there.
My tires are cold at this point, so I'm not hitting it that hard. Now, my clutch is going out. The slave cylinder went out, and so there's no clutch. He's pulling up next to me. And now there's this sort of tricky dance of going inside and sort of hoping that everyone knows where you are.
Yeah.
There's Dave again. And there's my red shift light on that lets you know I'm in third gear.
Yeah, and I see the white light over to the right as well.
Right. Yeah, it worked, but I'm not looking over there.
Yeah.
Now my clutch is slowly going away because the slave cylinder fell apart. But you can see I'm off to a pretty good start just going up the hill. And I think I missed a shift there. That's why Steve Link caught up in his Z car. And we'll talking and going
right
around
so
track.
The slave cylinder at this point like lost a seal or something, so you're slowly leaking fluid and you're losing your clutch. Now this transmission that you have, this dog box, is a straight cut gear kind of box. You could shift it without a clutch, but there's no real slipping of the clutch, and it's going to start to get harsh as you do it. It's not impossible, and the transmission can take it, but certainly not something you expect or planned on doing.
Also, a lot of things are running through my head. Like, am I doing damage to my to my car or my transmission or whatever it is, or what is wrong? Like, what's going to happen? Well, I'm not sure why I have no clutch pedal. I just know that the clutch is not working very well, and I'm in the middle of this race that I'm feeling, at this point, pretty good about, in the sense that I passed a couple of cars, I feel comfortable in the car, and I see a couple cars ahead of me that I passed before in practice or what have you. So I feel like, all right, I'm going to get a couple of these guys, like this purple Porsche. And there's a few other, you know, not, there's a BMW 3.5 CSLs and stuff ahead of me. And I'm looking at the cars ahead of me and I'm going, I think I can get up to these guys. But also I'm losing all feeling in my clutch. The clutch is starting to flop around at this point.
Yeah, the pedal now has got no feedback at all.
Right, but I'm also, again, looking at cars I think I can catch up to. You can bring the sound down a little. I'll tell you about JB Will, and I'll let you guys can see the whole thing over at car. Keep it rolling, though, because you're going to see something pretty funny with me in the 914-6, which is a certain point I had no clutch, and I caught him at the end of the straightaway, and he wasn't really backing off, and I was like, all right, I'm going for it. But the car's fast.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, like you said, you can see this video at carcastshow.com.
Car gets a little light coming over that hill.
You should lower the front.
Now we're, I don't know, what, four laps into the race?
Yeah. It's good. It's fast.
And I'm trying to catch up to these guys in these CSLs, which are good, proven race cars. And I'm like, all right, there's a couple of CSLs and a 914-6. And it looks like the 914-6 is holding them up a little bit. You can kind of tell when one car is holding up another car a little bit. Now it's getting a little
and
hairy.
I see your left leg moving, trying to get that clutch, just in case there's anything in it.
But really,
it's just, you're just going through the motions and just banging it into gear because the clutch isn't really doing
anything. I'm also seeing if I can pump a little pressure into it, you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, when you came in, it wasn't leaking that much. I don't remember because it pretty much leaked it out on the track.
I leave all my lubricants and hydraulic fluids and bodily fluids on the track. So I'm sort of catching the guy in this cool Jägermeister.
That BMW
3.5 CSL.
Badass.
It's badass.
So here's that 914.
Right. Who ended up, I don't know, we got to look, Max Zapata. What, that 914, I think it was number 59, we'll find out. Where did he finish in this race? Because if my car had held together, I probably would have finished a spot or two maybe in front of him. But that's if the car had held together, which it didn't. So, and also my feeling is I had three good full sessions and a good race here. And like, I'd done enough. I had no clutch. I didn't want to hurt the car. I wasn't sure what was going. You're not sure what's going on with the car. You just know that the clutch doesn't work.
Yeah.
You don't know what's
It's easy to talk about it now and say the clutch and, you know, throw out bearing, slave cylinder deal that's going on, but as you're in there,
I don't know if the transmission is going to blow up down the middle of the straightaway and lock up the rear tires or not.
Yeah.
You know,
and then you're that guy,
right? And
which
then
914.
Here's me going for it. 914 Porsche 58,
number 58.
I'm like going inside. I'm like, oh, I'm stealing him off, and then a little lock up here.
Oh,
he's not going anywhere, which I do like that about these guys.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I'm not letting you by. And he was not letting me by at all, which is complete. Look.
Oh,
he finished 19th.
I almost hit him. That is the opposite of dive bombing. Look, what I'm saying is I don't like dive bombing, but being aggressive, staying on your line, and not letting the person by, that's your own thing. All right, so the guy I passed finished 19th, and then the yellow flag came out at some point. maybe I would have caught another car or two.
Well, you passed them and seemed to pull away.
Yeah, and I would have liked the thought that there's a couple more cars that maybe I would have reeled in. So my plan, if I would have, now the clutch is really gone at this point. My plan would have worked well of starting 25th in the race before and qualifying up and then getting somewhere in the top 15, but
yeah.
It was not meant to be when the yellow flags came out. At a certain point, I just pulled off the track. And in my mind, I had a good run. I'm gathering these guys up in front of me. And maybe I would have finished 15th. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you absolutely would have. You're definitely
There's a whole batch of cars, whole three or four, five cars up there that I probably
these BMWs
could have gathered in. We're just watching, going around the stupid track. Worst podcast ever.
It's kind of mesmerizing.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. You got to go back and watch the video.
Thanks to Chris Maxipata for, by the way, putting all the GoPros in the car and making it work. Yeah, I think there's about five cars in front of me. I mean, I definitely would get up to them and then have a fun race with those guys, right?
Yeah, like now you're getting back into the group and, you know, you have to get around this BMW and then now you're sandwiched in between two and it sort of becomes a nice little battle.
Yeah, I think we're yellowed. I think we're yellowed right now.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we're yellowed. All right, we can stop the tape. So then we have the yellow. Now I got the clutch pedal flopping in the wind and we're under full course yellow and now we're just doing these like the pace cars back out on the track and I'm like if there was no yellow and I just caught up to that group of five cars, I would have been like, oh, it's on. But now that the full course yellow and the pace car gives you a little chance to collect your adrenaline and kind of breathe a little bit and go, all right, there's no pedal. The car's in one piece. There are these five guys in front of me, but I don't have a clutch.
Yeah.
And I'm not good to rev match and do it. I'm not sure what's wrong with the car. And it's Saturday and it's 4:30 in the afternoon and maybe time just to pull in and have a cold one. And then not a bad first outing with that car, yes?
Yeah, I thought the car was running great all weekend. The engine seemed to be pretty dialed in. It sounded good. It was fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we did our thing. We brought Sonny. We went to the parties. We saw Jewel at the singing and doing stand-up at the Acura party.
Yeah.
Sonny, now there's
she did 22 minutes of comedy in three songs.
There's a controversial picture going around the internet, which is Sonny looking at his phone while Daddy's coming around in his race car. But the reality is that Sonny was taking lap times.
That's a stopwatch on
there. I brightened up his screen in this photo so you can see what he was looking at. Yeah. It's the stopwatch on the phone.
Yeah, so, Sonny likes getting lap times.
Yeah, so put it out there to the world, Maxipata. And we'll edit together a good lap. And
if there's any controversy, it's on Sonny's reaction time on hitting that lap button. We saw one of the cars that was up for sale was that Porsche 959 in a trailer, and then the trailer like got unhitched and hit a tree.
Oh yeah,
maybe there was like a Meekum car.
I think it was a Meekum car. I wonder what that.
It was going up for like $500,000 because it was wrecked.
I think it was more like $350 to $450 or something.
Yeah, it's probably worth buying at that
Richard
point.
Richard Rollins should have bought it.
Yeah, Richard Rollins should have put an air ride on it.
Flat black.
Put some airbags on it. Would have been perfect for him. But
yeah, we didn't look up. So there's a 959.
Yeah.
Porsche.
Let me see.
Which traditionally goes for about $1 million. They're right at $1 million. Would that be safe?
Yeah.
950 to $1,050,000 or whatever. They're right at $1 million, right?
Yeah.
So this one looked like somebody hit one of those cement parking posts hard on the passenger side front. And I was looking at it going, all right, well, you fix a car, a couple hundred grand to fix a car. What are they going to want? They're probably going to ask 750 or 8 for it or whatever. But they're asking like 350 to 450 or something, or maybe 4 to 5. It seemed lower than what it would cost to fix it. But then I realized, I don't know what the stigma is of the car that was hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make it $1 million just because you put it back together because people know it was the one that got hit. But it was in the back of a trailer, I guess, that came unhitched. And what was the estimate on it, Max? Oh, you don't know.
Yeah, the winning bid was expected to be between $450,000 and $550,000.
Oh, okay.
Do you know there what day it went up? It was at Mecum, right? It was like Mecum.
Yeah, it was Mecum. Don't know what day, but it did go for $425,000.
Oh, it did.
Well, you know, in my world, I think you're $250,000 away from having a $1 million car, so not too shabby. But you know, who knows when you're ordering parts for 959 from Stuttgart.
I was saying before, like, you pick up one of those things, and if you ever had visions in your head of getting one of those, you know, $1.5 million or $1.8 million Kennepa modified 959s. You know, he does his little thing. We saw it at Lufka Cult,
right.
Sort of his, I don't know, his modified singer-ish version of a 959. If you're going to have one of those made,
why not start
with the wrecked one half the cost?
Yeah, so a 959 at RM in Arizona sold for $1.16 earlier this year. So
yeah.
Yeah, and this one, the engine's in the back, so it still runs.
Hold on, let me write that down.
Wait, where's the engine?
Engine's in the back.
The at 425, well bought.
Yeah,
you've got a lot of room before you get to $1 million to fix that car up.
Yeah,
but
except is that a carbon body, a carbon Kevlar body?
It's not that. It's the stigma.
Yeah.
It's when you go to sell it, if people go, oh, is this the one that fell out of the trailer?
Yeah.
Because that's damaged goods. All right. But you definitely want Geico if you're going to be pulling around.
That's what I don't know. When I read the insurance ad, I think of that car for some reason.
That's what we're saying. All right. Go to carshow.com.
Carcastshow.com.
Carcast.
Say it again, Max Batta.
Carcastshow.com for photos and videos of our Monterey Car Week trip.
Yeah, it's all there. Chris did a great job. Sean and Rob did a great job. Matt did a great job. Everyone did a great job, right?
Oh, yeah. We want to also thank everyone at Nissan for inviting us out there and putting on such a great event and giving us a nice little place to park our car right next to Steve Millen, Pete Brock, and John Morton for being on a show. Check that out from last Wednesday. Gordon McCall, great Quail event, great Jet Center event, Lincoln's Navigator, and of course Acura for a sweet little party and introducing us to Jewel.
Yeah. My future ex-wife.
All right.
Tune in next week for another episode of Going Racing. New episodes every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.